Good morning, everybody. I think my presentation is going to follow up on one of the slides, Why Worry Now, that Kate just presented. As you saw, a lot of the challenges on that slide relate to clinical services. So I'll be talking about challenges of addressing malaria in pregnancy through the antenatal care services. Basically, you know, just to give you a perspective of the burden of the problem, my country, Nigeria, has a population of 167 million, and women in reproductive age group 23%, with a high maternal mortality rate of 545 per 100,000. So in Nigeria, every year, about 4,500 women die from complications relating to malaria, which all by itself accounts for 1 in 4 cases of anemia in pregnancy, 11% of maternal mortality rate, and 1 in 10 cases of low birth weight. So our major services through the antenatal platform follows the WHO recommendation, which promotes, as Kate said, a three-pronged approach to prevent and control malaria in pregnancy. And this includes intermittent preventive treatment, the use, regular use, consistent use of insecticide-treated nets, and improved case management of malaria in pregnancy. The antenatal clinic should actually be a very prime opportunity, a platform to deliver such services, including malaria treatment, management of malaria in pregnancy. And apart from managing malaria in pregnancy, the antenatal platform, it's normally should be a very good platform too for addressing some of the complications of malaria in pregnant women, including severe anemia and so on. The target of the rollback malaria was to, by 2010, to have reached 80% of pregnant women. To have 85% coverage for all women attending at antenatal clinic. But we do know that these figures were far, far from those targets, simply because there are existing bottlenecks in the process of managing malaria in pregnancy. So what I will address in the following slide, the remaining slides, will include identify those challenges confronting MIP programs implementation in Nigeria, describe, you know, present some of the best practices. Fortunately for me, one of the great ones I'm going to be presenting, supported by ExxonMobil, was implemented by Japaigo, and the gentleman who is in charge is here, so if I miss anything, he will be able to add Brad's urging. And then explore innovative ways to deliver improved services to enhance uptake and coverage. So at the antenatal clinic, what do we normally do? According to the 2008 NDHS for Nigeria, only 15% of women receive some antenatal care. So 42% actually don't receive any at all. So obviously that is already a minus for covering women, all the women that require management of malaria in pregnancy. And most commonly, you know, only a nurse is about 30% and a doctor 23%. That is assuming that all these doctors are trained and the midwives have been trained adequately and have access to the drugs and all the services required to provide the quality care for these women. Only about 53% of the women would have seen a skilled birth attendant during the antenatal services. And in any case, only 31% of the women in northwestern part of the country receive any form of antenatal care. So a huge number, there is a wide variability in the number proportion of women who receive and are therefore able to access malaria care in pregnancy throughout the country, being better in the southern part, in the southwest, than it is for the northwestern part of Nigeria. Also, more than a third of the women received no antenatal care whatsoever from anybody. And these are women who will just go through pregnancy, you know, with malaria infections that affect not just the pregnancy itself, but also even the newborn. And the quality of care received during antenatal visits has remained suboptimal for many, many reasons, including the fact that because the women, not all of them book for antenatal care, those who do not register for antenatal care are not going to be able to access services. And some of the indicators of this suboptimal care include the fact that only 54% of the women took iron during pregnancy, and only 10% of them had any form of intestinal parasite drugs. 61% were counseled about danger signs in pregnancy, and 39% did not receive any counseling. And only about half of the women who had recent births were protected against neonatal tetanus. So, in general, the services for which the antenatal care is a very good, offers very good platform, are only, you know, available and to few who register for antenatal care services. And even then, not all of them who register for antenatal care services receive the two doses for malaria. So what are the IPT challenges using the three-pronged methods recommended by WHO? First, late antenatal registration in Nigeria, many of them register in late second trimester, if not even the third trimester. And indeed, the first time some of them will seek help from any caregiver will be when they're in labor, when they are not just in labor, in advanced stage of labor, perhaps even having difficulties to deliver. So those sort of women would have missed out completely in the care that could have been given during the antenatal period. Low antenatal care registration in Nigeria, less than 37%. And like I said, even when they get the first dose of IPT, not all of them return throughout pregnancy to receive the second dose. Kate just mentioned one of the challenges, great challenges of stockout of SP, the drugs that we use in the facilities. It's such a burdensome challenge for not just for the clients themselves, but for the caregivers, that all antenatal drugs, not just SP, even including supplemental drugs like iron, like folic acid, may be out of stock, or the clients may be expected to purchase them with their own money, which in the first instance they don't have, and it's one of the reasons they don't consult for antenatal care. There's wide variability in the use of SP in the private sector, basically because some of the practitioners may not even have received recent training in the current management of malaria in pregnancy. So they may still be using the old things they were taught with when they were in medical school, which are no longer very effective. What about bed nets? One of the challenges of use of bed nets distributing during the antenatal period includes the ownership of the process itself. Currently, most of the nets we use are provided with donor funds. And so when the donor funds end, not many of the governments have taken it up as a challenge or responsibility for themselves to provide a follow-up supply. Providing to keep up the coverage through the routine services has become a problem, not only from urban to rural areas, but from the south to the north and the east to the west. Addressing time-bound net durability is inevitable with large-scale replacement strategies. Now, we started with nets that last 6 months, and there were challenges with getting them retreated and also disposing of them when they're no longer in use. Now that we import permanent nets, permanent treated, long-lasting nets, which is supposed to last for like 3 to 5 years. Now, at the end of 3 to 5 years, then the challenge of resupply comes in. Not just the challenge of resupply, challenge of disposal. What do we do with the nets? The manufacturers recommend that we don't burn them because of environmental challenges. So we have 67 million people, 25 of them are reproductive age groups. So you have several million women who are using nets. And at the end of 3 to 5 years, we have to dispose of these nets. We don't bury them, we don't burn them. So do we package them and return them to the manufacturers? So it's a very great problem. And also the clients themselves are not trained on how to retreat them, nor the drugs for retreatment are available. There are other challenges with the availability of the drugs. Now, also the feasibility of use of ITN and residual indoor sprays. This is a very good opportunity for us to be able to implement that. But the level of poverty is just so much that it impinges first not just on nutrition but on health. The case management challenges include one that many of the providers are untrained, especially in rural areas and particularly in the northern part of the country where we don't have skilled birth providers. These are people who are below the level of physicians and nurses and have not had comprehensive training in antenatal care and even the use of ITN. But let me also add that even in the southern part where you have trained personnel, you know, skilled birth providers, many of them are not really been trained specifically or, not, like I said, nor are they aware of the modern management trends in prevention and treatment of malaria, especially resistant malaria and malaria in the first trimester of pregnancy. Most providers have not seen nor used the treatment guidelines nor the policy. There's lack of equipment for diagnosis, and yet not to overdiagnose malaria from febrile illnesses. We expect that malaria should be diagnosed definitely by microscopy, so you see, or you use the rapid test. So the RDTs and the ACTs, these are people who are not just familiar with them. And also for microscopy, you need the technologist. Teaching hospitals, some don't even have enough, let alone general hospitals or primary health care centers. Poor treatment-seeking behavior by the clients themselves. Sometimes they diagnose malaria, self-diagnosis and self-medication, which have contributed largely to drug resistance. And when it is diagnosed because of poverty, healthcare is not very cheap in Nigeria. It's very expensive, at least for the level of income of the average Nigerian. So there's underutilization of antenatal care services, and that's a major challenge for whatever you want to do to prevent or to treat malaria. There's also lack of awareness of availability of some of these drugs at the antenatal care services. And finally, there's poor community involvement. Generally, the communities are not involved in things like that are not clinical. I mean, things like distribution of treated nets, it shouldn't be the sole responsibility of a skilled provider. These are things I think that can be taken on by households and communities. So what are the opportunities? The opportunities include the fact that government is very committed to tackling the problem. There's a national guideline and strategy for implementation of prevention and treatment of malaria in pregnancy. There's a very strong collaboration between National Malaria Control Program and the Reproductive Health Unit of Federal Ministry of Health. And of course, we all know there is a global move to integrate malaria management, HIV, AIDS, and tuberculosis. The management of malaria in pregnancies is embedded in the antenatal care services, although the challenges that I've alluded to have obstacles. There are strong linkages with other programs, like I said, like HIV, AIDS, and tuberculosis. Now, Some of the best practices include the ones supported by ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil, of course, we know they have a malaria initiative program, which is clinic and community continuum of care, started in 2007, being implemented in 15 primary care centers, which are serving for local governments, with 368 primary care staff trained in the current system of malaria, prevention and treatment of malaria in pregnancy, and 43 state and local government care trainers were put in place to facilitate the project. This project is between ExxonMobil, the Akwa Ibom State Government of Nigeria, Japaigo, and the State Ministry of Health, and the respective local governments that are involved, and includes that health workers who have been trained, like I said, for the three of them, to reach out to mobilize communities to select volunteers, not to select volunteers for the communities, but for the communities to work together with them to select volunteers who are then trained by the trained health workers to as a liaison between the clinic services and community efforts, initiatives. And what has happened is that the use of IPT has increased. The blue is pre and the green is post. And you can see from 5.5% to 65.4%. 73% of this 65% were from the community directed distributors. And also the use of ITN has increased marginally, not statistically significant, but it has improved anyway. And some of the challenges that may have prevented a very much higher difference may be due to some of the points that I've already mentioned earlier. So the question is, in things like this that are primary care, I think the communities, individuals and communities and households should be involved, because really they are the primary producers of health. So in conclusion, what I've done here is to present results that suggest that the inclusion of community-based programs, as demonstrated by the ExxonMobil project, can substantially increase effective access to malaria prevention and also increase access to formal healthcare services in general and antenatal care attendance in particular. Given the relatively modest financial commitments, this requires community-directed interventions appear to be a cost-effective way to improve malaria prevention and also make it more participatory. But I must say that despite even these results, we cannot take away the place of the antenatal care services, because women must still have to be encouraged to use clinical services, to have facility-based deliveries. They shouldn't be expected to just go for deliveries. They should be expected to be looked after. I think what we need to do for the antenatal services is to strengthen the health system itself to ensure that the providers are well trained, the drugs are made available, and all the other issues of government employee-employer agreements, which sometimes we make people go on strike for like 3 months, 4 months, sometimes 6 months. It's happened, sometimes that much, that long, should be overcome. And I think it just boils down to the political will that should be stronger than it currently is. And I hope with that we will have reached our target of reaching all the women in pregnancy. Thank you.